Hello, thank you so much for joining us. Today we are still looking at chapter 2 and deciphering the message that God has shared with Arjuna about how to be and how to function as a human being. Of particular interest to me today is chapters 62 and 63 of the translation in my possession, and God tells Arjuna the dangers of having human weaknesses and what his condition, what Arjuna's condition will become if he doesn't do anything about his weaknesses. Sister Denise, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to read these two pages, page 62 and 63, and I want you to tell the viewer what is your interpretation of this. I noticed that this description of human weaknesses goes down in a certain progression, and for some reason Dante's came to mind, the purgatory, the vortex of descent of a human being when they engage or become weak. So it reads, "For a man dwelling on the objects of the senses, an attachment to them is born. From attachment, desire is born. From desire, anger is born." Let's stop there. For a man dwelling on the object of the senses, an attachment to them is born. What does it mean to dwell? And I want to ask you to answer this in terms of a practical example. I'm thinking of a man or a woman who has just started working and who needs a car because they live in a town or a city where public transport is extremely unreliable. So this person saves desperately to put down a deposit to buy a car. And the car is very important to this person because it's his or her only form of transport. But you see, it took him a long while to get the deposit to buy the car. So he dwells on the object of the senses for a long time. And then attachment to them is born. It's my car. That's his attitude, her attitude. So how do you understand this? And how do you apply it practically? So you have things and not get upset when something is taken away from you or it disappears by itself.
You know, here we are in our studio, and I'll say this is my chair, even though it's only been 2 days. Or sometimes you may go to a conference and you're in a hotel. And after 2 days, that hotel room is my room. You start to take possession of it by being there. So I take the word dwelling on objects of the senses not so much to mean that you're thinking about it for a long time before you get it, as in the example you gave, but you're just there, and by being there, by being associated with those items, you start to think they're yours, even though you know they're not. But you interact with them as if they are. You form a relationship with them. And then when they're taken away from you, you have a reaction.
Tell us about the danger of this attachment and walk us through why is it bad to be attached to something. We'll come to the someone later.
About to come to the someone. You know, people get married and they say, "This is my spouse." A man will say, "This is my wife." Then you get some children, "This is my child." And so you see them as things, and you start to have rights over them and think that you have rights over them, which means that you have dictate to them, and they take on more and more importance in your life. And then if they die or if they behave differently from the way you want, you start to get angry. And if it's not your possession and something happens to it, you don't care. When you hear in the news, "Oh, this many people died in this accident or this earthquake or this war," so, "Oh yeah, that's really bad, you know." But you don't really care that much. But if it's your own, then you really care. Because this idea of possession is the problem.
The progression of weakness is very clearly set out on this page. The danger of attachment, is it attachment itself, or because of attachment, desire is born? And because of desire, anger is born.
Well, it's always talking about the attachment as the problem. And the ultimate stanza of the Gita is, I've understood and all my attachments are gone.
That's in chapter 18, is it?
That's at the end, yes.
Yeah.
And so you're here in this world, the first attachment you have is to your own body. Mm. You have a sense of survival, an instinct. So this is my body.
Sister Denise, can I interject? Does this happen consciously?
No.
The problem with grasping this is that you don't go to a conference, sit on a chair and say, I'm going to make this my chair. Nobody comes near my chair. Okay, this happens on a feeling level, on an attitude level, and you don't even realize it. When you come back, if you go to the bathroom and come back and someone's sitting on your chair, you become angry and then you realize that you're attached to the chair. So all of this creeps in on you because of, well, the way we're structured, our internal structure. Now, how do you deal with, within you, that which you cannot see and you don't know is there? It's all happening in the dark.
One practice that we do is second by second to let everything go. So you really make it conscious that you're letting it go while it's unconscious that you're getting attached. So the practice of Raj Yoga in regard to overcoming attachment is you're always thinking, this is going to go.
Do you use words?
Might as well.
Okay,
but
so
a lot of the time you don't have time to think, you know, in that kind of a way. But you just have to be aware, this is going to go, this is going to end, nothing will stay. You just have to really make that as something that you're very, very aware of so that you, you're careful. Take, for example, luxury items. A person who says to themselves, you know, I really want to have a nice handbag. You go to any airport and you go in this very vast, tax-free area. We have all these expensive name brand bags. You take a bag, it's an expensive bag, you say, this makes me a better person than I was before I had this bag. Or you take a name brand pen or a name brand fancy mobile phone, any kind of status symbol item, you get attached to that very quickly and you need to insure it because you start getting afraid you're going to lose it because it's expensive and it's desirable, Your car, you start to, you know, the material, the temptation, the material items just, you know, really start to invade your sense of space, and it becomes very difficult to live very detached from all of this. So part of the practice of spirituality involves living simply, you know, consciously saying, I'm going to have items around me that I don't mind losing, or I don't mind if somebody steals it, you know, or I don't mind if it gets messed up or wrecked, because you're always very, very aware it's very easy for me to get attached to things. Then some people, they're not much concerned about things, but they get attached to people very easily. And so as soon as you see some nice person, you start interacting, forming a relationship, and pretty much you start to depend on them. So attachment also means dependency. So that person, that thing, that place makes you more than what you are when you don't have it, which means when you lose it, you become less than, or you feel something's taken away from you. You see, because even the way somebody identifies themselves, sometimes a woman, well, I'm the wife of, the mother of, the daughter of, you know, and you don't have an identity in your own right in many societies as a woman, but you take your identity from your husband, father, or son. You know, in other cultures, well, this is me, this is my identity, with or without these people, it doesn't matter, you know. So in the yoga of the Bhagavad Gita, what you want to be is complete without any people, any places, or any things. And all the people and places and things that you that come around you because of your karma, they come, they stay for a while, they go. You just have to be very, very conscious of things are there temporarily. And while they're there, that's great. And the moment they go, let go. See, our problem is we don't want to let go, we hold on.
Sister Denise, these things and people that we're talking about, they formed part of our identity.
That's what I'm saying.
And so,
but they're not part of our identity.
This expression, I create for myself a feeling of belonging. I create for myself a family. Okay? How are you able to lead a family life and live what the Bhagavad Gita is saying? Because we form relationships with people who are blood connection. I know you discussed this yesterday, mm-hmm. but I'd like you to do so again in this context, as well as friends and people who we hold near and dear for whatever reason. You consider them to be your own. And if something has to happen to the person, you feel sad because they're no longer there. Mm-hmm. We form relationships. Is it advocating that you be a cold person? I'm trying to grasp what this means, and it's whilst it looks and sounds lovely on the page, how do you live this? How do you live like this?
The way that we do this in the Brahma Kumaris is we take the idea of being actors. I'm an actor. This body is my costume. Then on top of this costume, I have this costume, which I can change any time I want. This one is with me for life. And then at the end of this life, I get a different costume. All the other people that I'm interacting with, they're actors. We come into a situation, and the situation dictates the roles. So while the situation is there, you play out the implication of the role. Here you are, you're an actor, you're in your costume, you're in a situation, and the situation requires you to play a certain way. And with the other actors, you play a certain way, and then when it's over, and you let go. And you have to practice that. And in that way, you become very, very flexible, because you never think, I am the whatever. You know, otherwise people take their identity from their profession. I am the head of this hospital. But if anybody challenges that, you're going to get angry. But in fact, you're not the head of the hospital. You're playing that role for some short period of time. So I think the whole message of the Gita is to make us realize that any of these things, they're temporary. Your relationship with them is short-lived. And the danger is that you start interacting with them as if they are forever, and they aren't. So this is where we have to change. We have to live in the world with people, belong, but be so flexible that you can take it up and let it go with circumstances.
What is meant by dwelling on the objects of the senses? And my next question from that is, how do you manage your senses? What is your relationship to the sensory information that you receive on the screen of your mind?
Well, I use these different practices that we have, you know. One thing in my life which is very interesting is I never stay in any one place very long, which means that...
I feel quite blessed to have you right here in front of me right now.
But it's only for
so
2 weeks,
audience.
You know.
Yes. Brief and meaningful. Yes, okay.
But then you also start to realize that even if you're not physically in front of a person, you're connected. And I think in the age of technology, we can make contact with anybody anywhere in the world anytime through all of the, you know, internet-based applications of our smartphones, tablets, computers, and so on. So we started to learn that you can really be a global person, and you can have access to anybody anytime you want. And then we're on airplanes all the time, so you can, you know, be pretty much anywhere in the world, and it doesn't make that much difference. Some place slightly hotter, some slightly cooler. There's variations in the cultures, but there is this phenomenon of globalization where pretty much all the airports look about the same, more or less, and the stuff you get is about the same because you have these big multinational corporations which sell the same thing everywhere. And so we have acquired a mentality which is more global, more international. Even the English language, fortunately for us who speak it, is very international. And you can go pretty much anywhere and somebody will speak English. So that's very, very helpful. This practice of picking up, letting go, really being with the people that you are with and not thinking about the people you just were with and the people who you're going to be with, but really be with whoever's here right now. And this idea of Ramdas, you know, be here now, is an important one. But as soon as you're not here now, you're somewhere else now, then be there. So it's really a practice of shifting quickly. Or you may people say the most stressful thing is getting married, and then the next most stressful thing is getting divorced, you see. So because you have this identification with this person, I am married to this person, that means it's a fact. But no, it's a temporary connection, but you don't know how long it is until it's over. Then you say it was that amount of time. But I think our cultures have taught us to assume temporary things are permanent. And we've got this collective delusion about it, which the Gita is telling us, do not be deluded, everything is short-lived, and yourself, the soul, that is forever, and you're just moving through all of these scenes of this drama as an actor, and flex with it, and let go when something leaves, just let go of it, and next thing comes, embrace it.
Denise, page 63 of my translation reads, from anger arises delusion, from delusion loss of memory, from loss of the memory destruction of discrimination, and from destruction of discrimination one is lost. Okay, so walk us through that.
Sometimes you will find it translated differently, that instead of the word discrimination, you'll get the word intelligence. And the idea of yourself, the intelligent being, getting lost because of coming under the sway of these emotions that are raised by your involvement with physical things and people. The beginning of it is you dwell on the objects of senses, then you get attached to it. Then if it's pulled away from you, you get angry. And when you get angry, you're not able to think straight. You come into passion. You know, we talked earlier about passion, and why it's not a good thing is that you can't make a good decision when you're in a state of passion. You will make a bad decision. And then that means that your intelligence is no longer operating, which means that you have really destroyed your consciousness. And what we're trying to do with the knowledge of the Gita is to become a master of your intellect, your mind, your sanskaras, your surroundings, the hearts of the people around you, your future, your past, everything. A total master. That's why it's called Raj Yoga.
By the time most people have read this, the book itself, but particularly these two stanzas, you would have realized, I'm here already. Okay? I've already, I'm not sure how much of my intelligence has been lost, but I definitely have anger, delusions, a myriad of attachments, desires, etc. So my question to you is, now that you know, now that you know how far you've sunk, how do you reverse this damage, as it were?
In many ways, you're not really ready to do this until something or another has happened to you to make you realize that you're not in control as much as you thought. You do not have and hold the possessions that you thought you had and hold. So it comes at a time in one's life when circumstances have let you know that you are deluded to some extent, and then you become the seeker. You want to know, okay, what is life all about? What is this? Why am I so in chains? How did I get in this situation? It's only really when you start to have these questions that these books like the Bhagavad Gita become really relevant for you. And sometimes people will get handed a book that is along the same lines, which will awaken the spiritual seeker in you, and you will follow the trail until it satisfies you completely. And of course, the ultimate satisfaction is you become the student of God and you realize how deluded the worldly life is, actually.
Mr. Denise, the impression that I get reading these two stanzas particularly is God is saying to Arjuna, this is how you keep yourself safe.
Yes.
Okay. Take us through how one understands this and uses this for the safety of the soul. We all have all of these weaknesses and some within already. Mm-hmm. Okay. So on any given day, anger presents itself. Your attachments present itself. Your illusions and delusions present themselves in your psyche, whether you express them or not. So they come up, and then you've got to deal with them. And then on the one hand, you look at this and you think, I want to be this. I want to be God's true child and follow this. How do you keep yourself safe in light of what you've become?
One thing that we do in the Brahma Kumaris practice is at the end of every day, you will assess yourself. It's like your day is a kind of a videotape that you have in your mind. You can play it back and just see, okay, what happened to me today? And you'll pinpoint areas where in your eyes you failed because you got provoked, you got upset, you lost something that was dear to you and you were not neutral about it. So you will assess yourself and in the light of the knowledge that you're learning, and you will see, yeah, I know this, but then I messed up because even though I know it, it's not part of me, you see. So the whole process is to get it from being something that you understand intellectually to something that you are. And that means it has to become your sanskaras. So for it to become your sanskaras, you have to act in that way many, many times, because what you have is the sanskaras of being deluded, attached, angry, and so on. And so you have to perform your actions, very pure actions, non-attached actions, which are so correct under the tutelage of God, that gradually your sanskaras change and you have those sanskaras rather than the other sanskaras. And that takes time.
Yes, sounds as if it takes a lifetime.
Yes, well, you have a lifetime.
Okay.
But it's true, you know, spiritual practice is a lifetime thing. It takes a whole life.
So, any last word before we say goodbye to the audience today? I see we've come to the end of today's episode.
I think I would reiterate the suggestion to really familiarize yourself with these very famous lines that are part of the Gita, because people have been thinking about it for so long. And when you hear them, think about them, roll them around in your mind and really try to interpret them, that is going to help you to actually become someone who is living according to the spirit of the Gita.
Thank you. So there you have it. Just two pages or stanzas from the Bhagavad Gita has elicited a discussion that's half an hour in length, but we've taken a lot from this, haven't we? Most of us have found ourselves in a position where we've already become whatever's contained in these two pages, but there is hope. You can redeem yourself, and by simply applying that which is stated in the Bhagavad Gita and bringing yourself out of the depths from which you've fallen, you can become the person that you want to be and what God is advising you, encouraging you to be. So Sister Denise, thank you so much for sharing today, and we hope to see you at the next episode. Take care and goodbye.